Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the post-election, if not post-result, edition of the Newsbusters podcast. It's been a long night at Media Research Center headquarters. Not for me. I tend to nod off at like 11:15. I was not here. But once again, just like in 2016, we have a surprising result. We don't have a final result, but we have a surprising result. There is one thing we can definitively say at this point, if we may use the media's own terminology. The media has underperformed expectations. They have been telling us for how many months now that Joe Biden was ahead by 8, by 10, by 14. And we ought to really ask ourselves at this point, who should pay attention to anybody's polls? And we're just not talking about the state-by-state polls. We're certainly talking about the national polls. And you have to ask yourself, if we as political people make political decisions, even journalistic decisions, what we decide to cover, what we decide not to cover, based on polling, then aren't we all dealing with here a fake picture? All the news based on fake polls sounds like fake news. Okay, maybe that's a little harsh, but it's that whole notion of the news media have been telling us since 2015 that Donald Trump can't possibly win. And as of right now, on Wednesday morning, it's quite possible he could win. This is not what people expected. This is not what people expected right here in the heart of the right-wing anti-media machine, or whatever Brian Stelter calls us. We are all led to believe, well, doesn't look good. But we come in today, we can go below a level, below the presidential level, and say, it looks like the Republicans are going to actually gain some seats in the House. It looks quite good that the Republicans are holding the Senate. There was no blue wave. We can definitively state there was no blue wave. Now ask yourself why that is. Because the news media certainly wanted a blue wave. They were rooting for a blue wave, and they were talking up a blue wave. They were focusing on the issues that they thought would bring a blue wave, and they didn't want to talk about the things that might hurt the Democrats. They have spent this entire cycle trying not to talk about the things that would hurt the Democrats. So we can sit here today and say, there were things that have hurt the Democrats in this electorate that they simply do not want to talk about. You know, Tom Brokaw comes on last night now. He is that senior official. You know, I'm going to come on in a turtleneck and seem very old. But he last night was talking about, obviously, after the George Floyd incident, that there's a lot of white people supporting the Black Lives Matter movement. I think that's not as true as there's a lot of us white Americans who believe in the concept that Black Lives Matter. That's not the same as supporting the socialist goofball movement known as Black Lives Matter. And they have made this mistake where they didn't want to talk about looting. They didn't want to talk about rioting. They always went into this mode where they tried to say, well, 97% of our protests are mostly peaceful, which on some level sounds like, you know, 99% of airplanes land safely. It doesn't mean the plane crash isn't news. But the plane crash is an accident. Looting and rioting is intentional. Nobody said, whoops, I accidentally broke into the Nike store. I certainly could have told you, as a native of Wisconsin, that rioting in Kenosha was not going to be good for the Democrats in Wisconsin. This is the sort of thing that they simply cannot discuss on our so-called news networks. Looting and rioting is not going to help the Democrats because they're so defensive, because Donald Trump will say basically that looting and rioting is terrible and they don't want to agree with Trump on anything. Joe Biden had to be dragged kicking and screaming into a statement, but gee, looting and rioting is bad. But Brokaw said the black demonstrators kind of lost control and they were not just demonstrating anymore. They were going into streets and they were robbing stores and they were tipping over cars and it went on most of the summer. How much of that had to do with this, the election, I'm not sure. But it was a long way from Dr. King, who was so successful with a program of nonviolence. This is where you say there is no accountability in the media for looting and rioting. If anything, we have a news media that are defensive, who try to support and protect people who loot and riot. They use words like unrest. They want to use words that aren't pejorative. There's a revolt. There is an uprising. That's the one they really like. There is an uprising. We're going to fold the looting and rioting into a general political pressure to make Trump look bad. There is somehow no possible backfire from this strategy. So there's a lot of things here that they might have to come in and say, well, that might have hurt and that might have hurt. Trump winning in Kenosha would seem to suggest that that might have hurt. And then, you know, I think the other thing that really has to be said here, that's an obvious point is, which is where I started, was just the state of polling. We were commenting about how Chuck Todd over the last couple of days has been disparaging. Oh, some of these state pollsters, I don't know where they got their degrees. Sort of suggesting that the quality of state polls by people like, I don't know, let's say, in Wisconsin, the guys that do the Marquette University poll, which is what a lot of people in Wisconsin look at first. I don't know at this juncture how accurate or inaccurate the Marquette University poll was on this race. It's just this whole notion of they're disparaging the state polls. It's like, it seems to me like all of the polls were wrong. The Fox News polls were wrong. And one of the problems with that is this entire idea that people think that democracy somehow didn't happen because the final results don't match the polls. That's absolutely what happened in 2016. There was this whole notion of, well, Trump couldn't have possibly won because that's not what the polls before the election said. What's really amazing, though, is this is 2020. We have had 4 years of the news media incessantly hammering on Trump and those terrible Republicans who enable Trump, who dare to support him, that they have to always suggest that this is going to be a terrible thing that's going to happen to the Republican Party. Well, when you say this sort of stuff and then you call people and say, please state your opinion of Donald Trump. Well, let's, for example, just take the notion of an approval rating at this point. Do you approve of the job Trump is doing as president? Well, it's possible that you could say, I don't approve of his attempt to be presidential. You know, I don't approve of him as a human. Are you going to vote for him? Yes. You can, so the approval rating may not be the right measure because they've been saying this whole time, well, Trump never got over 50%. He's the only president never to get over 50%. Well, on some level, again, it's like there's never been a period. There's never been a week, I don't think, where the news media were net positive on Trump. Trump came down with the coronavirus, and his coverage tone did not improve. Or if it did, it was minuscule. I mean, that just shows you the kind of news media we have. They're not the people that you can't trust them to call balls and strikes. It's a joke. It's a bad joke to call them referees. And so when the pollsters call, a lot of people don't answer. We've already got away from the notion that pollsters can call landlines. Now pollsters call cell phones. Well, a lot of times now you can see, I don't recognize this strange number. I'm not going to pick up the phone. These people don't tend to trust internet polls, you know, and I think this is the whole question. Which polls were outliers? So when a poll like Rasmussen suggests that Trump could win, they all say, well, you can't trust that poll. Well, again, it's because they all have, we have assembled the polls. We have a turnout model. So we do a bunch of interviews, and then we stack it by the perspective of how many people we think are going to turn out. So conservatives for many years have complained about how they undercount Republicans when they assemble their turnout model. And this is where they really should look at the exit polls. And I think in this particular case, 2020, these last-minute polls should have been pretty accurate because people had already voted. You could do a turnout model based on, to some degree, in some places, by seeing what the turnout model was in early voting. But the polls did not turn out to be right. So both sides of this start feeling that the system is rigged. What's obviously rigged are these polls, the way that they construct them. They're not reality. They are a guess. They are an assembled guess. They're trying to guess on a model that's not reality. So we have to, again, say none of us should run this democracy or run our public marketplace of ideas based on these polls. I mean, I would say to you, I'm going to naturally not believe polls by ABC, CBS, NBC, the New York Times, as much as these people want to believe that these are the authoritative media. You know, PolitiFact had this tweet yesterday where it was like, well, here's the people you should really trust when it comes to the election returns. ABC, CBS, NBC, NPR, the New York Times. No, we definitively do not trust these news outlets because they've made it definitively clear on a daily basis that they believe this president is some sort of threat to our democracy. They were very upset overnight that Donald Trump said, I won this thing. Biden said, we think we won this thing. Trump said, we won this thing. Biden, everybody's accepted that because that's the way a politician, they expect to talk. Trump's going to say, I won this thing. Trump was complaining about this stacked system in Pennsylvania where they're like, well, we'll get around to counting the votes when we feel like it. And if they come in 3 days late, we'll count those two. That's the sort of thing he's complaining about. The president's going to say it in a way that's not as articulate as people would like, and which allows all of the networks to come on this morning and fuss. But if we have states like this that are going to take a long time to do their count, and we have a large section of mail-in voting, I think the people have every right to suspect that the news media is going to put the fix in. Just the way they should suspect when the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, is putting out tweets saying Biden will win Pennsylvania. That's not really the kind of social media that somebody who wants to be a trusted elections officer should do. These people all got upset that Brian Kemp in Georgia was running for the Senate while he was still Secretary of State, and that is a bad look. But it is also a bad look for the Attorney General of a swing state to simply suggest Biden will win, and we, you know, in a way that it sounds like we will make sure that he wins. Why should we trust officials like this when they really have presented to us that their notion of Trump is that he's some sort of fascist authoritarian nightmare? doesn't that make it more tempting for them to cheat? If you think arrogantly that you represent democracy and the president represents authoritarianism, that to me is one of the ways that democracy gets undermined, because some people are so arrogant that they think that they know how the results should turn out. You were seeing this last night. There's this whole notion when the election returns don't go the way that they expect, that they're so disappointed in the American people. They're so disappointed that people did not listen to them. How dare you not take my incessant daily advice and vote against Trump? And then you say you're democracy, you represent democracy, you're the ones that keep democracy from dying in darkness. We're over you. We're done with your arrogance. Alexandra DeSantis at National Review used the word wish casting. It's good. And I think it says a lot about the way that conservatives and Republicans feel about when they watch political coverage in these major newspapers, in these cable news networks, in these broadcast news networks, what we call the old media. It's wish casting. This is what we've had. They said to us in 2017, he wasn't long for the office. The walls were always closing in. The Mueller report was going to be the end. The impeachment of Trump over the Ukraine was going to be the end. They've been trying to end this presidency the entire time. And so, to some degree, you can look at these results in 2020 and say, this, my friends, is democracy. Not what you were doing. You've just spent the last 4 years trying to subvert what a democracy is. So whatever result we get, and it's at this moment, it's up in the air. I consider this what we right now, this is a victory. This is a defeat for the liberal media and their attempt to run this country in between the elections. Let's stop letting the liberal media run this country and set the table and define the narrative in between the elections. That's what the conservative media is here to do, is to say, we're going to discuss the things that might hurt the Democrats, because we have a media that absolutely refuses to discuss anything that might hurt the Democrats. So I'd pop a champagne cork right now and say this was a good election, because it was a bad election for the liberal media and their prediction machines and their wish casting. We've had enough of your wish casting. Why don't you try some news casting? I mean, election nights is one of those rare occasions where the American people's verdict on stuff actually shows up, where votes actually show up, and we can get, this is the most accurate poll that we get, is every 2 years or every 4 years, or if you live in a state like Virginia, every year or so, because we'll have the elections here in 21, in the fall of 21. But these are the real polls. And my feeling this whole time that I've been watching the press is they always want to run the media, they want to run the country in between the elections, and when there's election results they don't like, they want to ignore them. We absolutely saw this in 94 with Peter Jennings, where the Republicans took the House for the first time in like almost 50 years, and it was all, the people held a tantrum. And we have to instruct you on how you got it wrong. We've had enough of you. We're going to speak. We're going to speak at the polls, and we're going to speak on the air, and we're going to speak on the blog. And this is what we have to say, and that is, this is the democracy. Conservatives and Republicans get to speak. And you need to spend some time and actually hear us. Joining me now to discuss the election returns, someone who got even less sleep than I did, Jeffrey Dickens, Deputy Director of Research. Mr. Dickens was concerned that he may get the crew, the night crew here, a little bit too upset. Joy Reid last night very upset at the idea that this election could go to the Supreme Court. And she said,
if somehow they manage to stumble into the Supreme Court, do any of you guys trust Uncle Clarence and Amy Coney Barrett and those guys to actually follow the letter of the law? No. I mean, it is a completely politicized Supreme Court that you can't just trust that they're going to do the right thing.
And you said,
disgustingly racist. This is something that I understand. It sounds different coming out of a white anchorman's mouth than maybe someone who's black American like Joy Reid, but it's racist. It's still racist. This is something that would get anybody else suspended and not fired. And I am amazed. As of right now, I have yet to see any apology from Joy Reid. I think at the very minimum, she owes what Justice Thomas that is she's clearly making a reference to Uncle Tom, and I was just disgusted by it.
Yeah, I mean it is the irony of all of this is here we are, we're on MSNBC, who's saying you can't trust this institution because it's so completely politicized. Well, what's more politicized than primetime on MSNBC? But yes, I mean it Clarence Thomas has had to deal with this his entire judicial career. The way that he came in was he was railroaded on the way in. So I mean, I'm sure for him it's like, yeah, it's another day. But you're absolutely right. I think it's interesting in that sense, in that Joy Reid was a controversial figure when they picked her, who had these problems with all of the nasty tweets, so the quote-unquote homophobic tweets. Gosh, you know, you would think that there would be some discipline for that, but I'm going to guess no.
No, she's radioactive, like you pointed out, even on the left, like with the tweets about the homophobic tweets. You're right. We remember the Justice Thomas hearings. We've seen all the, crap that's been thrown his way. And when you're a conservative black man in America, you get it from just all sides, and he's handled with nothing but class. And what Joy Reid, I think, again, what she did, I think, is a fireable offense for anybody else.
Well, and I think this is one of those things that Democrats are so liberals are so clueless about white conservatives who want so badly to prove, like, no, we're not racist, we're not white supremacist. You know, and we're the people who get very excited about Clarence Thomas on the court. We get very excited about Candace Owens being on the bestseller list. We get excited about John James possibly winning a Senate seat. We grew up in a time where basically the whole notion was, let's have a Republican Party that attracts all voters with that classic founding vision of, you know, democracy for all, an economy for all. Not a socialist economy for all, right. We've had so much of this, obviously in the Trump era, it's been times 11, but we're not racist people. Speaking of other controversial moments from last night, Trevor Noah, The Daily Show, had this, put out a tweet, and you're a Star Wars junkie more than my boy Ben over there, that they put out this tweet where they basically suggested, is the Death Star ready yet to destroy Florida?
Yeah, it was a video tweet of, for all the sci-fi nerds that are already familiar, and of the Death Star booting up, so to speak, and then firing, and then the next thing you see is it a map of Florida, and the map of Florida being blown up by the Death Star, a lot of people thought that it was going to be pulled down. I think it's still up, so Comedy Central and The Daily Show and Trevor Noah are cool with the intent. I know it was a joke, but it's still like, oh, gonna blow up Florida because they went to Trump, kill all these millions of people.
Well, yeah, this is where our Tech Watch people were like, where is Twitter? What are the community standards? Because the president makes a lot of the things that they find the most offensive, he's joking.
Right.
Well, okay, we can understand that Trevor Noah is joking. I think the obvious question I had, which was, obviously The Daily Show doesn't give a crap about ratings with people in Florida.
No.
We want you dead if you don't vote our way. It's not sound like a great strategy to build an audience.
Yeah.
But you know, what kind of audience does that show have?
Well, you know, just so our audience knows, Tim Graham and I, we're kind of aficionados of comedy, and we look, if it's funny and it's even at the expense of a conservative, a Republican, if it's funny, it's funny, we will laugh at it. But what we've seen is we've seen comedians, excuse me, so-called comedians at this point, Trevor Noah and Stephen Colbert, so broken by Trump, they can't even be funny anymore. Yeah. They just go on epic rants and rails on their late night shows. And Saturday Night Live is really taking a dip too.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, conservatives are the brunt of a lot of humor. And so, yes, if you're a conservative, you're going to say, well, I'm going to try to make a judgment between, no, that's actually a funny point, and no, that's, a lot of times it's just the intent. You can smell the intent. The intent is just, I'm angry and I'm venting. I'm not trying to make you laugh. I'm just mad and I have to get it out for my own psyche. And that's where you're just like, I don't know where you're going. So they have the Colbert special again last night. And he brings on Charlamagne Tha God, who was a rapper?
No, well, he had a very short stint as a rapper. It didn't go very well. So he ended up just going mainly into talk radio. I think he did some DJing, but he mainly talk radio now, and a little bit of comedy, but he's mainly a talk radio podcast host now.
Well, and I think they treated him here during this election cycle as sort of a really important stop. You know, Kamala Harris got in trouble with mm-hmm. him for identifying her favorite rappers as people who've been dead for 20 years.
That's right, Tupac. Yeah.
And Joe Biden, you know, got more guff there than he expected.
Right. That was the show. It was the Breakfast Club. And that was the show where Joe Biden infamously said, if you don't vote for Joe Biden, you ain't black.
Yeah. Same thing. Here we go again.
Yeah.
Is you're either with the left or you're not actually your own skin color. Mm-hmm. But Charlamagne Tha God was on Colbert last night, and we got this on Newsbusters. I just thought it was kind of bizarre. They were talking about the COVID and so on. And he says to Colbert, if Trump could take credit for Obama's economy, a black man's economy, he can take the blame for the death of the Black Panther. That would be Chadwick Boseman. Also, I'm holding him personally responsible for the loss of Aretha Franklin, Nipsey Hussle, Pop Smoke, Kobe Bryant, and Kanye West. And then he acknowledges, well, I mean, Kanye didn't die, but he is certainly lost. I mean,
right.
Where is that coming from?
Well, yeah, I think he was trying to do a bit, and it's just, again, this point, and doing it on Colbert, where's the funny? It's just France now at this point. There's no art to that. It's just, you know, so I think Trump has broken a lot of people. And before we came on the show today, we were talking about how the media, I mean, we should probably talk about, like, obviously at this point, the last dance aren't called yet, and we don't have an official winner, but the media said, oh, Trump was going to end the Republican Party. Well, here's what we know. We know it looks like the Republican Party may very well keep the Senate. We know they've made gains in the House. So where is this epic throttling of that Donald Trump was going to bring upon the Republican Party?
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, I would call it wish casting. Alexandria De Sanctis called it wish casting on Twitter. It's they seem to confuse real life happenings with what they want to happen. I think that they have this idea in their mind of who Trump is and then thus what the Republicans are. So they take everything that they think Trump is. They think Trump is, if not a white supremacist, he thinks that the white supremacists are an important part of his voting coalition, so he's got to pander to them. Well, so then they're going to try to say, all of us who would actually dare to vote for Trump must be white supremacists. And this is what gets them all worked up, I think. This is what we have to ask ourselves, whether we're going to be able to go through a process of counting the votes. Joy Reid doesn't trust anyone to count the votes. She said last night, actually, on MSNBC, that she was happy that there were Democrats in control of Pennsylvania, there were Democrats in control of Michigan, there were Democrats in control of Wisconsin.
So I saw that,
she
yeah.
could trust
right.
that it wouldn't be political or something. I mean,
yeah.
This is where we are. And I think that what we started to do way back in the day with the Media Research Center in the early days, and Brent Bozell would make his pitch, and he would say, we just want the conservatives to have a fair shot here, an equal shot, and let the American people decide. And what the media does here is they never let the American people decide. They just say, no, the American people are too dumb. The American people are too dumb to be trusted on this. They have to be told. So let's go back to this notion of one of the trends last night, especially when Florida went badly for the Democrats, was that they were saying, sadly, the Latinos are susceptible to this propaganda that the Democrats are a party of socialism, that the Democrats are a party of being soft on Cuba and Venezuela. Where do they get this stuff? I always just wonder, like, are you not paying attention? You know, they tried to ask Bernie Sanders in the primaries to denounce Venezuela, and he's like, oh, I'm not so sure. I want to talk about that. And Fidel Castro, he's misunderstood.
Yeah, no, this is, if you have any knowledge of history, and especially the Cuban community in Miami and Miami-Dade County, really, that's where Trump actually overperformed, and really I think was the key for him winning Florida, is you're talking about families that lost their homes, that lost their properties when Castro came into power. You're talking about, like, there's rightful concerns about, like, you know, generational wealth not being allowed to happen because of racism in America against black people. What about the lack of generational wealth for these Cubans? And they fled to come to America. I mean, you got people that, you know, get on rafts and come over. So to not understand how they, more than anybody else in America, said how bad and awful socialism, which always leads to communism, is really just how out of touch they are and how wedded they are to promoting their socialist ideals.
Yeah, I think that they always come at this from this arrogant perspective of, well, the Republicans are doomed over time because the country's becoming less white. So the Latinos are naturally all Democrats. Every immigrant into America must be a budding Democrat. Obviously, all of the blacks are going to be with us. They get very upset when not all of them are. I haven't seen the exit polling on all the minority votes, but certainly in the late polling, yes, Trump was doing better against among Latinos than they expected.
Oh, I just saw AOC tweet last night calling out the Democratic Party for not doing as well with Latinos. So even she recognized that Republicans made significant inroads.
Yeah, well, and again, they just all have this assumption that because Trump was trying to build a wall and that he was trying to have some sort of border control, as opposed to sort of the Beto O'Rourke position of, like, let's tear the walls down, people! Woo! Yeah. They just can't imagine that Latinos would vote on any other issue than immigration.
Well, I mean, can you think of anything more racist than just presume someone's ideology by looking at the color of their skin?
Yeah, well...
Oh, this is how you must think. I'm assuming, you know, so yeah.
I think they do that. Yeah. You know, this is, again, where we would say, as old Reaganites, it's the whole notion of, no, we're going to make inroads among minorities with the vision of what America is. But with Trump, they just can't understand that at all. And obviously, the Trump campaign did work at minority voter outreach. And I think this is where the news media just comes in and says, oh, this can't be happening.
Right.
We're not going to cover this because this can't be happening.
It blows up their narrative. It's got a hush-hush. No, no. He's a white supremacist. He won't have anything to do with any sort of approach to helping out the black. He has this platinum plan that he had right before it came out before the election is very strong. It got a lot of reception. Even Ice Cube was like, hey, they brought me in and they took some of my platforms, and he got in trouble.
Yeah.
For Darren, you know.
And then there's Lil Wayne.
It's Lil Wayne, yeah.
Lil Bump.
Right.
And somebody like Lil Bump, I come over to Dickinson, go, is this guy for real? Because I don't follow the rappers.
It's called SoundCloud.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard of that.
Right, yeah.
I'm a music buff, but not as much the hip-hop. So I always go to Dickens for my hip-hop advice. But I, you know, Michael Che on Weekend Update was doing this thing where he was... He suddenly saying, you know, rappers don't speak for the black community.
Yeah.
Nice try. You know who else doesn't speak for the black community? Michael Che. So I promised Dickens we would get all of our pundit stuff in. We've got two media analysts sleeping on the floor here. It was a long night. I don't do that. I'm too old for that stuff.
I couldn't stop watching. I was here at the MRC until 11:30, kind of just for the hang. And then I went home and I was still watching like coverage. I think until like 4 a.m. This is who we are, people. We're news junkies. I'm kind of just working off adrenaline right now. I mean, maybe 3 hours of sleep, but I'm still here now. I'll probably crash in about a couple hours, but this is what we do at Newsbusters.
It's exactly right. And I think it's, again, as we began the show, it's way better than we had any right to expect from the way that the media covered this thing. So keep up with us as we try to follow this whole morass on Newsbusters. Come once, twice, 24 times a day. Thank you for listening.